Relief in the silent ways we grieve. A Bungau Stray Dogs fan fiction. Written by Feral Rookie. Read by God of Laundry Baskets. It is rated teen and up. Content warnings for Dazai-typical suicide references, referenced self-harm, and referenced child abuse. Summary. The flowers are rarely a heartsick suffocation hazard, despite what gets peddled as the truth. Most absent love is more complicated than romance, and much easier to hide. It starts when Dazai is 13 and decides his life isn't worth living. His bruises literally bloom, red spindles spidering out beneath his skin. Silky petals in pale, warm colors stained red pour from his broken nose. Mori saves him when he's 14 and bleeding out at the forearms, and after that, the flowers refuse to stay inside him any longer. They grow out of his blood, up through his flesh, where his veins are close enough to the surface. Hingambana and Narcissus mocking him for a death he deserves but cannot manage to find. Dazai prunes them down to his skin, wraps himself in bandages like vines to keep them from climbing out. It doesn't actually work in the end, but it slows their progress. When he splits open his skin, for reasons that have nothing to do with the love he's denied himself, his blood is shot through with volatile compounds he can't hide. He hates the tell, but he hates living more. Chuya knows. Even if he can't understand the why or how, Chuya knows Dazai always smells like flowers, when staying alive is more a challenge than an inconvenience. Dazai resents him for it. At 18, he abandons his life. While he hides, something new grows, squeezes his heart uncomfortably, and pushes its way painfully through his chest. Long flowers, red and yellow like a torch of flame, opening upside down atop one another. New flowers erupt from his limbs, and they hurt him in ways his own self-loathing never did. Clusters of small white flowers, balls of pale purple petals like spun sugar, fine. But the wine-colored blossoms, their petals upturned and set with thorns, tear mercilessly through his skin. He's becoming a garden, and every flower bears testament to feelings he never wanted in the first place. He wants to salt the earth. Instead, he hurts and he bleeds. Left buried so far beneath his own grief, he is no longer certain he can keep his word or his resolve. And for the 2 years gone to ground, the only things keeping him alive are his promise to Odasaku and the way the smell of his own blood makes him violently ill. The latter is harder to bear because the weight is visceral, inescapable. A wreck of sorrow and guilt and loneliness, bleaker than anything he's felt since he was 15 and still alone under Mori's thumb. He wants to die. Just not like this. Dazai looks them up once. Hanakotoba for the flower heads breaking through his skin. Yarrow and floss flower and gooseberry, and the torch lily pushing out from beneath his ribs without his consent. He knew what they meant already, bone deep, without having the exact definitions. It's not a surprise. All the same, he's so outraged, he smashes his glass on the cold kitchen tile. Angry at Odasaku, angry at Chuya. angrier at himself for the undue blame and missing them both so fiercely. He cuts his bare feet trying to clean up the mess, throws up his feelings in the sink. At Sushi's burns, blister, rupture, heal slowly in raw stripes, flesh torn away by hot metal. Even after the skin heals, the ache doesn't fade as the scars form in knots. At Sushi's skin stretched and buckled and ugly, except where tiny salvia flowers bloom like tissue paper, curled delicate and thin. They're pale and soft, embedded in the scars, tangled between wheels of tissue, and still inexplicably alive. The headmaster tears them out with surgical precision, sneers at Atsushi. "You don't even deserve to want love." For years, he believed it to be true. Working with the ADA, though, it gives him some measure of the confidence he should have always known. Occasionally, he thinks he might be allowed to feel affection for them. He's not certain what that feels like, having never known it before, but he gives himself permission to imagine it. Dazai constructs the skeleton of hope in him, bone by brittle bone, until he can see its shape. And slowly, he begins to think some of them might have affection for him, too. Still, his scars grow flowers, and he keeps them to himself, at least until Lucy needs them. When he sees the same petals unfurling across her burned arms, he feels something in him fracture. His chest aches with hurt he's never let go, sharp with the conflict between the relief that he's not alone and the sorrow that anyone else spent their childhood like he did. Later, long after that moment in the guild's custody, when he showed her he understood her pain, Lucy asks to see them again. She corners him in the stairwell, late one afternoon, as he's leaving for the day, takes him by the wrist and drags him towards the cafe. Kyoka glares murderously, and Atsushi flails, struggles to find the words for either of them. In the end, he smiles apologetically at Kyoka, says, "I'll see you at home," and lets Lucy pull him through Uzumaki's storefront and into the pantry kitchen. Blushing furiously, but refusing to look away, refusing to break eye contact, she asks stutteringly, Can I see them?" It takes him a moment to figure out what she means. The waiting stirs something desperate in her expression that Atsushi does not understand. All he wants in that moment is for it to be clear. She should be smiling, or at least scowling, at him. Insisting he owes her for the inconvenience of his existence in her disingenuous way. So he nods, terribly serious, and tugs his shirt from his pants to unbutton it with shaky fingers. The air is cold against his skin, and under Lucy's gaze, in a pantry too small for the magnitude of this gesture, he feels far more exposed than he is. She reaches out slowly, telegraphing her intent, giving Atsushi plenty of time to stop her. He doesn't. It feels like fire when she brushes her fingertips gently over his scars, flowers. The damaged nerves at their edges flare hot and stinging, a startling contrast between all the places he feels nothing at all. Atsushi breathes out his tension and lets her continue to touch him. If she feels as strange and awkward as he does, she doesn't say. That itself makes him feel brave, or maybe just momentarily fearless. Either way, Lucy's sleeves are loose above her exposed forearms, and he's careful when he slides his hands to the crook of her elbow, runs his thumb over her bicep, touches the matching scars he remembers hidden there under the soft fabric. With a shuddering sigh, she tucks her face into the crook of his neck. When he buries his nose in her hair and wraps his free arm around her shoulders, still hesitantly soothing each other's scars, she smells like vanilla and the cinnamon they put in Uzumaki's coffee on Wednesdays. For once, Atsushi allows himself to accept this kindness, to want its comfort. For once, Atsushi allows himself to accept this kindness, to want this comfort, to believe for a moment that something so generous could belong to him, and marvels at the soft warmth of seeing and being seen. Akutagawa's lungs are scarred, slowly doing their damnedest to drown him on dry land, constantly full with coughing until he's choking on blood, and he's certain that, short of dying, there's no way it could get worse. By some horrible cruelty of the universe, it can. Does. Dazai is patient with his physical weakness, especially when he first takes Atagawa in, all bony limbs and malnourishment. Beyond that, though, Dazai has patience for little at all. Nothing Akutagawa does pleases him. Despite his best efforts, he can't gain even a scrap of approval. The first time Dazai puts a barrel of a gun between his eyes for all his misguided failure, Akutagawa spends the entire night transforming the bathroom tiles into a war zone of the blood and flowers torn from his lungs. He empties himself at Dazai's mercy. His lungs continue to fill. They take root quickly. Soft gunzia petals, reds fading into yellow, look like the sky on fire. Jin pushes his hair back and cleans the blood from his chin in the rare moments he accidentally lets her catch him heaving out his feelings. Her early arrival home, a door ajar in the middle of the night. He only allows the gentleness at all because he trusts her to protect this weakness of his, bitter though it makes him. There comes a point when Akutagawa fails to activate Rashomon in time, takes Dazai's kick to the stomach. Wheezing frantically with the wind knocked out of him, petals stick to his tongue and fall wet from his gasping mouth. Dazai smiles at him, sharp and cruel, says, "I'm impressed, Akutagawa, by how thoroughly you've committed to being a failure." With disdain, turns his back, walks away without hesitation. That burn in his lungs, the hot shame of never being enough, stays, even when Dazai doesn't. The ADA is a good distraction from his own heart, enough that the torch lily dies off within Dazai's first 3 months of employment. Under the bandages, the others still grow sluggishly, content to eat away at him, no quicker than the pace the Narcissus and Higanbana have been at for years. Even those have slowed. The hopeful warmth of the agency gently standing down his sharp-edged indifference. Eventually, though, there is Chuya. There is his return to Yokohama, conveniently timed with Dazai's need for intel. There is Dazai playing captive in the dungeon long enough to goad Chuya. All the hurt hiding beneath the rage written on his face, betrayal in the weight of his violence. Accepting it is Dazai's broken attempt at penance. Later, sitting in data storage, he swears he can feel the slow shift of flowers in his blood. With their brief Sokoku revival comes a fresh resurgence of flowers. Something about the familiar comfort of banter and the sated hum of no longer human devouring corruption guts him. In the aftermath, the divide between muscle memory and context hollows him out, leaves Dazai unaccountably lonely, realizing that, for the first time, Chuya's post-corruption recovery won't include him. 2 days later, he wakes to blood on his futon and thorns caught in his skin. He calls out from work. With everyone else on the mend and the return of order to the city, the ADA and Port Mafia see fit to reassess the state of their truce. He texts Chuya, "I need my dog to do a trick." Follows it with, "Reschedule the meeting." There's a less than zero chance Dazai will be up to playing Mori's games in time, too busy bleeding, his unwelcome feelings everywhere. Rather than waiting for a reply, he shuts off his phone, washes down far more painkillers than is generally advisable with what's left of his cheap sake, attempts to sleep through the rest of the day, and prays to absent gods that he never wakes up again. Instead, consciousness comes crashing back in the shape of Chuya shaking him by the shoulder, swearing, dripping blood on his shirt. Resigned and still only half-conscious, Dazai squints up at Chuya, clutching his hand, putting pressure on his palm with the opposite thumb to stem the flow of blood that's already rolling down his wrist. It's only dimly that Dazai registers the pressure of a knot in his shoulder as another new thorn. "When did my room become slug-infested?" Dazai groans. "The fuck is this?" Chuya asks, holding out his clasped hands, bewildered and irritated and ignoring the insult. The cut is deep, narrow, sure, but he's lucky it didn't go clean through his hand. Fury doesn't begin to describe what Chuya will be reduced to if he came this far across town for answers he doesn't expect to get, and ends up with the inconvenience of stitches in his palm. "Gooseberry," Dazai replies, as though it's a reasonable answer that anyone should have known. "Okay, asshole, why the fuck is this?" Dazai sits up slowly, rests the back of his hand in the other palm across his thighs. He won't look at Chuya, doesn't answer the question. Even with the blank expression he's put on, Chuya can see the muscles in his jaw straining against the clench of his teeth. "Dazai!" "Hanakai," Dazai mutters. He's sluggish with the drugs still in his system and settles for the easiest solution he can muster on the spot. The immediate goal is speed. Give Chuya just enough truth for him to give up and go before this uninvited visit becomes a fully escalated incident. He's tired, in pain despite the meds. Half of him wants to blame Chuya for the hurt, for being the source of the thorns hooked in his skin, even though he knows the distance that caused the flowers and the hollow behind his ribs aren't Chuya's fault. Chuya isn't the one who left. Chuya isn't the one still aching all these years later from a hopeless tangle of sentiment and lonely nostalgia. "Unrequited love? You?" He scoffs, incredulous. "That's actually unbelievable." Dazai sighs heavily. Dramatic for the sake of misdirection. "Chuya should leave it be. Let Chuya believe its heartbreak. It's simpler than the truth. Costs less than admitting Chuya's worth to him. Expression carefully empty, he adds, "You don't need to worry about it. Unfortunately, it's not even going to kill me." Chuya scrutinizes him for a moment, sucking the blood off his thumb, as though he can see past the wall Dazai raised. It's Dazai's forcibly blank stare that makes Chuya question his original assumption. Briefly, he considers the possibility that perhaps it isn't as unlikely as he'd thought. The idea of a pining Dazai doesn't resonate as true. All the same, he can't imagine an alternative that would justify Dazai's blank mask either. "Hey!" Dazai interrupts him before Chuya can say anything of value. Ask any more questions, he'll be compelled to dodge. "Why are you here anyway?" "To kick your lazy ass," he snaps reflexively. He turns on his heel to hunt down something to clean up his hand, a tactical retreat from the way their exchange unsettled him. "But I can see it's not worth the trip I wasted," he adds over his shoulder. Chuya disappears down the hallway, water running in a sink, cupboards clattering. It's not hard to imagine the scowl on his face as he rummages around for first aid that's not just more of Dazai's bandages. It makes him itchy, like the flowers are growing at the thought. There's nothing sensible about Hanakai. No valid explanation to be had for how it works anyway. For all Dazai can tell, they just might be pushing up from his skin on account of Chuya's proximity, reaching out to close the yawning space between them. Before he can consider it further, Chuya pokes his head back through the doorway, glaring. "Turn your damn phone back on if you want to set a new meeting. And don't ask me to be your middleman next time." The implication slips under his skin. "I'll be sure to get you a treat for being such a good dog next time," Dazai simpers. "Fuck you," Chuya shoots back, without any real malice behind it. He slams the front door on his way out. The Jinko infuriates him. The Akutagawa won't deny, to himself at least. His lungs ache a little less, with the insistence that he already has Dazai's approval. Oddly enough, the bright anger Dazai's new subordinate directs at Akutagawa for all his perceived shortcomings is itself reassuring. Something about his strange, unwavering certainty that Akutagawa underestimates his own worth eases his breath. Dazai's acknowledgement, when it comes, has him coughing up stems and roots sodden with blood. The petals choke his breath far less often after that. Still, Akutagawa chases praise, desperate for the certainty, the truth of it. He wants to stop seeking the validation, but years of its absence have left him hungry for the satisfaction of being held in Dazai's esteem. He wants it now, with his clear lungs and without feeling the weight of inadequacy caged beneath his bones. For all Dazai's complaints about the partnership, no one was closer to him than Chuya, at least in the ways Akutagawa counted. It was aspirational to be held in such high regard, and from that vantage Chuya sees him, has always seen him. And that's always been almost enough. So it shouldn't come as the surprise it does when Chuya, in step behind him, comments, "You seem healthier lately." "Yes, well, it turns out you're not supposed to choke on flowers when you breathe," he deadpans. "Congratulations," he hazards. "Higuchi?" Akutagawa's face ignites as he parses the meaning. No! He coughs, hesitates. No. All due respect, Nakahara-san. People don't talk about it, but Hanakai isn't always about, romance. It's the version told, nearly to the exclusion of all other truths, because lacking some other kind of love feels like a more shameful inadequacy, more intrinsic, certainly harder to accept than just being unlucky in romance. Oh. Chuya doesn't bother to hide his surprise, if for no other reason than the petty amusement of watching Akutagawa further devolve into his discomfort. Yes. When it seems Akutagawa won't continue, Chuya hums thoughtfully, waits. Akutagawa awkwardly clears his throat out of nervous habit. It's not always the lungs, and it doesn't always kill you. Anyway, I'm not, he replies haltingly, awkward. In love. With anyone. Rather than replying, he lets the silence grow stale between them as they continue towards the garage where a car is waiting. Chuya thinks about the cruelty of bodies constantly, pointlessly, offering flowers like a consolation prize. Thinks about the smell of Dazai's blood and a thorn tearing open his palm. Dazai. Narcissus. Self-love. Higanbana. Death. Yarrow, bravery, battle. Floss flower, loyalty, comfort. Gooseberry, tormented by your bad mood. Torch lily, it hurts to think of you. Atsushi and Lucy. Salvia, good home, familial love. Akutagawa. Ganzai, treasure flower, I'm proud of you. The end. Thank you for listening.